Get 12 weeks of The Spectator in print and online for just £12. And we'll give you a £20 Amazon gift voucher, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Kate Andrews. It's a day some thought may never come, or at least seemed like it was taking quite a long time to get to it. It is the first day of Eat Out to Help Out. Now, clearly we're going to end the podcast by going through what everyone has had or was planning to have to celebrate this. But first off, James, if we just get to the politics and the hopes for this scheme. When Rishi Sunak announced this, there was an idea there'd be a build-up. We've had quite a few Twitter banners, but it's been quite quiet in the past week or so on this. And I think that's in part because the newspapers have been filled with government concerns over a second wave. So the scheme is in action, but is it true to say the government is a little bit nervous about pushing the business side of their response so far when they're also telling people, if they're not careful, we could be locked up again?
So the government is trying to walk two different tightropes at once, and one is, you know, the public health, you know, what can you do, as Chris Whitty said at the end of last week, you know, that probably at the limits, you know, the view of the chief medical officer is that we are at the limits of what we can do in terms of opening up. And then on the other hand, the government is trying to prevent catastrophic levels of unemployment, and one of the sectors that has been hit hardest by coronavirus is obviously the hospitality sector, because, you know, the lockdown directly affected those businesses. And I think this is an attempt to kind of save jobs in that sector. Now, the challenge for the government is to kind of hit that sweet spot of saving jobs in that sector, but not seeing a second spike in the virus. Now, I think there is a kind of mild bit of interesting move in the government. The government are very keen to stress that the data from Test and Trace suggests that it is when households meet up in people's own homes, but that is when they think that most of these people come into contact with an infected person. So it's quite noticeable that in the Greater Manchester lockdown, you know, they've banned people from having people in their own gardens, but you can still go in your household to a pub or a restaurant, because they're kind of, they're essentially saying that is safer than having people come through your house and into your garden. There's the psychology seems to be that they think that once people are inside your own home, you kind of forget social distancing somehow. You know, the fact that, you know, there isn't a hand sanitizer everywhere means that, you know, you go back to pre-virus life. But there's undoubtedly is this challenge for the government, which is, you know, how do you ride these two horses at once, and how do you avoid the horses pulling you in opposite directions?
Now, Kate, we know that the Chancellor was particularly worried about the hospitality sector and the fact that it employs a lot of young people, and he wanted to avoid those redundancies, especially because the peak season would be around now. So the hope is they can get their, you know, their customers in. But what are we looking at in terms of costs from the Treasury on this? Clearly, we've entered a new era, we could say, in the sense of the sums tend to be billions these days on lots of these schemes. So how much is behind this, and how does it compare to the various other things they've announced?
Well, compared to other things, a few billion pounds is a drop in the ocean these days. Of course, we wouldn't have been talking about it like that even 6 months ago. It would have been a huge investment. But the Treasury is estimating that roughly £4 billion will be taken up from the VAT slash for the hospitality sector and the Eat Out to Help Out scheme. Now, of course, this is flexible, because if more people eat out to help out, the higher that cost is going to go. If a lot of people don't take up the scheme and it's not very well received, then it's going to cost less. But it's interesting that the Treasury haven't put a cap on it. They are pursuing this policy in hopes that it will encourage people to get back out there. As James notes, though, it is difficult to walk this tightrope of saying, we really want you to go back to your local restaurants, we really want you to be spending more money. Also, by the way, we are now actively preparing for a second wave, which may or may not be here already. It's not inspiring confidence, let's say, if you were already nervous about going back to your restaurant to get a meal, that the government is already talking in this way. So if you look at the open table reservations, the most recent data suggests that Germany is actually back above pre-COVID times, whereas UK reservations are roughly 14% under. Now, that data does not include Eat Out to Help Out, because it just started today. We'll see if the scheme boost people going back out. But the UK still has like quite a way to go in terms of getting back to its pre-COVID consumption on the restaurant scene.
One tiny note of caution I put in which would apply to the UK too on the German data, is a German friend of mine was telling me, they were saying the restaurants don't feel as busy to them, and they think it's because you have to book now.
Mm.
So because you can't be a walk-in, open table looks...
Because
you have to book in advance, the data is... Yeah, because I was saying to them, based on exactly the same data, I think you might even show me the data, Kate, that, oh, you know, it all sounds like it's back to normal. And I went, no, it's not. And I said, oh, I thought the restaurants are busy. And they said, no, it's because of a COVID thing, so you have to book in advance. You can't just turn up and ask for a table.
Yeah, and also you will have fewer covers, so it's harder for restaurants, even if they are fully booked. Lots of restaurants are only taking one table for a dinner reservation, you know, when that table would often go to a couple of people.
That's a very important point, Katie, because a lot of people are saying, oh, we're at capacity, you can't get into restaurants. Well, remember that a lot of these restaurants have had to slash their capacity by 50%. So when we talk about pre-COVID levels as well, we're not really ever talking about normal.
James, just briefly on Eat Out to Help Out, is the hope in the Treasury that this means people will go back to the restaurants, realise it's not such a scary thing to do, that they're not going to catch coronavirus every time they go to a restaurant, and therefore keep the habit post-August when this winds down? Or is it more, we don't mind if they keep the habit or not, this is just to get these places money at the time when they should have the most customers this year?
Yeah, I mean, part of the problem is that lots of these businesses are essentially seasonal, right? They lose money for large parts of the year and make money in summer. And obviously they haven't got the full summer season this year in the way that they normally would. I mean, the attempt is to kind of turbocharge the summer season and try and kind of allow these restaurants to kind of lay down some stores for the winter. Although I mean, interestingly, looking at some of the offers, some of the restaurants, particularly the higher end of the market, appear to be almost offering this as a kind of loss leader, just to kind of get people back through the door. They seem to be subscribing to that, the philosophy you were setting out there, Katie, that, you know, once people have come back once, they might be more prepared to come back again.
But then the next question is, how long can we even go to restaurants for? With talk of more local lockdowns and second national lockdowns, something we know the government wants to avoid, rife over the weekend. James, we heard that there was a stress test, or, you know, an exercise, we could call it, wargaming on Wednesday with the Prime Minister. What was going on there? Because since then we've heard about various things that are up for discussion. London could be closed off if rates go up. We also could have the over 50s told to sit in. Quite a few different things. There has been some kickback since, but where have all these ideas come from?
So, I mean, I think this was an exercise designed to look at what you, if you are determined to avoid, as Boris Johnson says he is, a second national lockdown, what are your other options? And the two quite extreme options appear to have come out of this scenario. One is, you know, you segment the population. You basically say over 50s are at greater risk from this, so stay at home. This idea has unsurprisingly gone down rather badly with people who are over 50 but not yet retired or planning on retiring.
Of which there are quite a few.
Yes, and quite a few who write national newspaper columns and the like. So I think the government appears to be backing away from this idea. The second is London. And now this is actually a more interesting question, right? The Greater Manchester lockdown shows that Test and Trace doesn't yet offer you specific enough data to really come in and say, right, it's that street, that street, that street, and this street, and those are the ones we're going to lock down, and we'll let the rest of the city get on with it. One thing that's become clear in the government's work on this over the last few months is that they've looked at kind of, could you shut down a kind of quadrant of London? So, you know, could you say, right, North East London, we're going to shut down, or West London, or whatever. It turns out that they don't think that's possible, because there's such a rate of flux within the city, because the city is so integrated in terms of its transport network, in terms of getting from one side to the other of it. And people make these journeys for work so much. So I think they are struggling to come up with the option. Although I would say this, which is, if you end up in a situation where you were locking down London, you were kind of shutting down, no one was allowed out beyond the M25, right? And, you know, you had another big city such as Manchester lockdown. Yes, you've avoided a second national lockdown, but that's not the kind of scalpel-like South Korean intervention that was the original aim of the game when they came up with this whole local lockdown strategy. The idea there was that, you know, it would literally be kind of one very small place locked down to kind of to halt the spread of infections before they got going. And I think this is the challenge. I think the other issue which has came out of that the reports about Wargaming in the Sunday papers is this question of air travel, right? The kind of the view of why the UK excess death level is so high now appears to be in government is that it was essentially all those people returning from their half-term holidays in Italy and Spain meant that the virus was spread all over the place. You would have thought that the place with the national highest excess death toll would be one of the places that had a kind of mega outbreak. We didn't have a mega outbreak in this country. The worst affected place is Birmingham, you know. And yet we still have the highest excess deaths in Europe in the first 6 months. Yeah, but that is because you had all these, you know, localised spreading of the infection from people who come back from abroad. And I think that means that the government is very worried about, you know, when do you choose to shut down the airports again. I think if you are, you know, I don't think our Spanish holiday makers who found out they were going to have to quarantine for 2 weeks, I don't think these are the last set of people who are going to have their travel plans disrupted this year, to put it mildly.
Kate, if we're talking about imprecise local lockdowns, ultimately, I think particularly those in what can be termed the Westminster bubble can be accused of being quite London-centric. We are recording this podcast from London. But just, I suppose, on an economic level, I mean, what does it mean if London is locked down and, say, the rest of the country, you know, and lots of other parts of the country not? What kind of knock-on effect does it have?
Well, the knock-on effect is huge. If you are shutting down one of the most vital economic areas, the entirety of the UK is going to be impacted by that. But I would argue that we're already experiencing that impact by locking down so much of the Northwest. It's estimated that 2 in 5 people are residents of the Northwest now are in some form of harsher restrictions right now, in some form of localized lockdown. That's much more regional than it is local. And at normal times, if you had these restrictions in place for 2 in 5 people in the Northwest, we would be talking about going into recession. Now, we're already there. It's already the biggest economic contraction in roughly 300 years. So we're not thinking about it in those terms. But there's huge effect to what our lockdowns that are not so targeted, as James says. They aren't street by street or office by office. They are huge areas. And James kind of hinted at it. I mean, something doesn't feel right here. A lot of businesses out there are taking on policies, offering giveaways to their customers that are loss leading. Now, the customer might say, well, this is great. August is going to be wonderful, but this clearly isn't sustainable. So whether you have to go into a second lockdown after this, after the comeback from the first is already so difficult and so uphill, you know, we're moving into territory that could just be absolutely devastating, whether it happens in London, Manchester, Edinburgh, Cardiff, or frankly, all of these areas at the same time will just determine how bad it is.
And finally, just to lighten the mood slightly as we end this podcast, James, Eat Out to Help Out, have you done your civic duty yet?
Not yet. I'm sure I will at some point this week.
Okay. Kate, have you?
I have, Katie. I was at the Laughing Halibut on Strutton Ground in Westminster. Excellent dining experience, very COVID secure. Looking forward to many other meals, helping out this month, doing my part.
Thank you, Kate. Thank you, James. And thank you for listening.
Get 12 weeks of The Spectator in print and online for just £12. And we'll give you a £20 Amazon gift voucher, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.